Welcome to the M3 podcast. Your journey to movement, mindset, and medicine starts here. Welcome back to another episode of the M3 podcast. It's me, your host, Mermaid Bree, and my next guest of all places I got to meet at twerk class. We literally shake ass together at the gym and have met through mutual friends at different birthday dinners. We've ran into each other working out. And you know when you just meet someone and divine intervention comes through to tell you, hey, you need to connect with this person at a deeper level. I almost wasn't going to go get dinner after twerk class with our whole crew, but I decided to go. Something was telling me, let's go get tacos. I'm down. So when I met with Morgan Hanelick, her and I started talking about relationships, different types of attachments, eating disorders, body image. All of those topics came up and I said, I need to have you on this show. I didn't realize she's a mental health speaker. She's also a therapist. She does social work. She's an author, a poetry artist, everything. She's had her own amazing journey overcoming her battles with eating disorder as well. And that eating disorder has marked her 9 years from today. So this is really special for her and I to talk about the ability to heal, not just on your own, but through relationships as well. And I have my own past, my own story and struggle with body image issues, body dysmorphia. I've had a prior eating disorder. I have grown that into different forms, from whether it was being in a sorority in college to starting my bodybuilding journey to running marathons in between, trying to figure out ways to cut calories and to shape my body a certain way, not realizing that it just comes down to loving and accepting who I am in the present moment, that my past doesn't define me and that shouldn't determine my future as well. And without further ado, let's get into the show. I am so excited to have Morgan with us today. She is a great friend of mine. We met in twerk dance class of all places. The divine has a fun, mysterious way of connecting people for the best reasons. And I think that this is exactly why. And when we met after to go have tacos down the street, we ended up talking about attachments, anxiety, relationships, eating disorders, all of that. And I was like, wait a second, what do you do for work? And I'm so impressed by you. Can we share with the audience all that you do to help others?
Yes, absolutely. So one of my hats is a mental health speaker. So pretty much I tell my own story struggling with various mental health conditions and story of recovery in schools, organizations, and communities. I also see individual clients for one-on-one therapy, where a lot of these clients typically have problems with attachment, eating disorders, anxiety, trauma, etc. And then I also am a writer. So I've published one book and I am in the middle of writing another right now.
Let's talk about the first subject that you just mentioned, is speaking with communities and with schools and the different topics that you touch on. I'm sure it's different with age groups and how you compartmentalize it to each individual, but what is it like when you talk to younger kids versus older kids, and what topics do you bring up to them?
Absolutely. So with all of the kids I talk to, I bring up the same topics. I always tell the story to kids that are at least in middle school and older, because they are complex topics to kind of grasp. For example, mm-hmm. I talk about my own experience with an eating disorder, and eating disorders are incredibly complex mental health conditions. So I really want them to be able to relate to the message and understand the message. With the age group, I will tweak how I talk about it and kind of the language I use talking about it based off of the age group. So for example, in one part of the talk, I talk about having really intense emotions and how I'm really easily impacted by the things around me and my environment, and that can kind of change my emotions pretty dramatically. So if I talk about that with sixth graders, I'm going to say, I have really big emotions, and give an example of when I was in sixth grade, so they're more likely to understand and relate to it, opposed to high schoolers and adults. I might give a more complex example and talk about it in a little bit more of a clinical way.
And to communities, what type of public service do you do as far as like going to, I don't know if you maybe talk in hospitals or if you talk like on stage, like how we had met that way too?
Yeah, absolutely. So I've talked to sports teams before. I think that's a really big one. A lot of sports teams will really like to bring me in just to talk about the eating disorder aspect of it all. I've talked in a few treatment centers before. I've even talked in a library before. So it's kind of random, but definitely a wide variety of audiences.
And then you have two books now in the making. So let's share with the audience what your first book is, what inspired you to write it, and what it's called.
Yeah, absolutely. So my first book is called Somber Suffocation. And it's actually my journal when I was struggling with an eating disorder. And I kind of got the idea when I ran into someone one time at my gym back when I was, I think, 19. And this person that I met published books. And somehow we got talking about how I really wanted to turn my journal into a book. So it's a really just in-depth story where you can really see how the different things that were happening in my life contributed to me eventually wanting to control my food and my body in order to feel like I could gain validation and acceptance from others and to feel like enough. So the story is really just going through that and going through how my recovery came to be.
I want to get into it already. What is your story?
Oh my gosh. Where should I start? Should I give a brief description of it all?
I think whatever feels most comfortable for you. If you want to share it, share it. We're here to listen. Okay. We're here for the in-depth.
Sounds good. Basically, I would just start off with talking about little me and how a lot of experiences in my life kind of led to me having what I like to call a seed of self-doubt, which just really made me feel like I wasn't enough and that I should always be doing more. So at a really young age, I really started to become a perfectionist and feel like if I was perfect, then the people around me wouldn't be disappointed in me, mm-hmm. they wouldn't criticize me, and they wouldn't leave me. So by doing this, I started to seek validation through my relationships. And I had some friendships growing up that I eventually found out about times that these people would leave me out. And that kind of grew that self-doubt where I started to think, I don't have a sense of belonging and people go out of their way to leave me out. Therefore, I must be the problem. So I pretty much got this narrative in my head at a really young age that I'm the problem and I'm always going to be the problem. So I really internalized that and took a lot of my emotions out on myself. And then when I got to high school and got in some of my first relationships, I had no idea what a healthy relationship looked like and what healthy love looked like. So everything that happened in my relationships, I thought was totally normal. And I also, that's when I realized that I'm someone that has those intense emotions, especially in my relationships. And, you know, there's pros and cons to that, where I learned that I have the capacity to love really, really hard and care so much about something. And at the same time, I also have the capacity to feel really hurt and really rejected and take things really personally. So now I look at it as a superpower in terms of my mm-hmm. capacity to feel so much. But at the same time, with that superpower also comes the skills that I had to learn to manage when things don't feel so good. In one of my second relationships in high school, it ended really poorly. And I felt really strung along by this person. And because of that, I thought that controlling my food and my body would make me more desirable and it would help me get the boy that I love back. So that's when I pretty much started to control my food. And it was also around the time of Lent. If you don't know what Lent is, I think you do know because you're
Catholic. Christian.
Okay. Yes. Yeah. So I was giving up all foods that I thought were bad at the time in my life. And I put the quotations because I don't currently believe in good or bad foods. I believe in the nutritional density of foods and how some has more than others. And as I was cutting these foods out, it became a really slippery slope for me where I started to get addicted to the feeling of being in control when so many things in my life felt totally out of control. So I got really addicted to that feeling and I felt really powerful by being hungry. And I started to make these goals with myself where if I ate over a certain amount of calories in a day, I felt like I was a failure and like I was losing. But if I ate under the calorie goal for the day, I felt like I was winning and I felt in control and powerful. My parents started to notice that something was going on, so they would weigh me. And I think this created more anxiety unintentionally. They had the best intentions, but this created more anxiety around feeling like I had to be a certain way. And eventually with time, I ended up getting admitted to a residential treatment center. So I'm from Massachusetts and the town I'm from is in like Western Massachusetts. So there were really no eating disorder centers in my town. So I had to go to this town out near Boston where I went to a residential facility because at the time I wasn't medically stable enough to do an outpatient program because my weight was very dangerously low and I needed that stabilization. So basically in this treatment center, I started to do individual therapy for the first time and group therapy, and I started to understand myself and why I was doing some of the things that I was doing. I started to realize that I was anxious and that I was depressed, and it wasn't normal for me to feel really unmotivated all of the time, and it wasn't normal for me to worry all of the time and have racing thoughts and get really hot and sweaty and stutter over my words. So I started to finally put a label to some of the things that I was experiencing. And most importantly, I also learned to have 3 meals and 3 snacks a day and what a balanced meal looks like. And I got the exposure to eating those foods and not having all the terrible things happen that I thought would happen if I were to eat those foods. And eventually, with some time at the center, I started to feel a little bit of life, because at this point, I was feeling really numb to everything and I couldn't really feel anything at all. So I started to slowly laugh with the other kids at the center. I slowly started to see a little bit of hope and a little bit of joy. I started to mend some of the relationships in my life, and I started to realize that it gets better. And eventually I was discharged from the center, but obviously when I was discharged, I was definitely not cured. I was going back to the exact same circumstances, the exact same friends, family, school, and life. So the big question was how I was supposed to get better and continue to get better in a world that I had gotten so sick in. And that's really when I learned that recovery was about stamina, where I had to and continue to wake up and choose recovery every single day, because I knew that no one was going to be choosing it for me.
Okay, so a lot of people think that, like, when you are going into an eating disorder, that you're just one day deciding not to eat or one day deciding to purge out your food, like, that it has to be those two extremities. But there are so many intricate, small steps that allow to that stage, maybe of that extremity. But when I had my experience with eating disorder, I should say the struggle of having an eating disorder when I was 18, it was started when I was 17 and it peaked itself by the time I was 20. And it's crazy how it actually evolved into bodybuilding. I recognize the similarities with that. And I had an absolute control over the amount of calories that I was putting in. And this was around the time when MyFitnessPal was telling people that if you could lose 2 pounds per week, that you would get that 1200 calorie balance and you could outrun your bad diet, quote unquote, right? So I would go on the elliptical for 2 hours. I would go and run for another hour. I would not eat much for the day, maybe 1,000 calories at the beginning of it. And then I would go and drink alcohol that night before, right? Also, alcohol can suppress your appetite. It makes you feel really nauseous, can also lead to purging as well. And so there were times where I was thinking like, oh, if I got sick what I was drinking, then that was me not taking in the calories as well. And it continued with the pattern of having a toxic relationship in coherence with that, where I had somebody who was constantly cheating on me. I was in a physically abusive relationship. I felt like what I deserved was to be with somebody who was punching me. You know, I had a broken jaw, a busted hand, like a broken hand. I had 2 black eyes. And this was all from like 18 to 20, just in those 2 years. And that person I consider to be an alcoholic. They couldn't control their alcohol and they didn't know how to just have a couple drinks. And so it was like a peer pressure for me to be around somebody who I felt was socially wanting to drink and to be in that presence of it. But then I also didn't want to eat and drink my other calories throughout the day, right? So I would not have much and get drunk even faster. And the cycle and the pattern continued to spiral deeper and deeper and deeper. And it was to a point where I felt like I was valued or worthy of wanting to be a certain way, that this person would love me more because they were constantly cheating on me with what I thought were beautiful, skinny women, right? We all thought the days where being skinny was hot, but now I'm like, I don't want to be skinny. I want to be thick. I want to be fit. And that was actually a continued desire that I didn't realize the pattern evolved into bodybuilding, where it wasn't actually bodybuilding for a bikini competitor at my state. I was what I thought I jokingly said called the skinny contest, not muscle contest. And these women would beat me. I constantly for years would get second place over and over and over. 5 years in a row, I got second place. And it was because I wasn't winning next to the person who had the, you know, more rib cage showing. They were valuing the loss in body fat. And I remember I'd have like friends and coaches and people telling me things like, oh, you know, that tastes like second place. Like if I wanted a bite of something, or to like be mindful, like if you take another bite of that, you're not going to win on stage. Like constantly, it just valued what I had by what I was putting into my mouth and how I saw myself as an exterior version of like my, you know, my body. And I recognize that people, I'm coaching clients who are still in this. I literally have clients coming weeks out from shows, and I feel that they came to me and they trust me because they've seen the difference of what I've gone through over the years, having been through those extremities where I lost my period for 9 months because I wasn't eating enough. My hormones were all out of whack, actually 10 months. And then same thing with I honestly feel like I went through a phase of being bipolar and very hyperactive because my hormones were just irregular. And it was so crazy to see people don't realize that it's not just you don't eat the food or you get sick. There's so many in between stages.
Totally. And you're making such a good point also with like how common things like orthorexia and bodybuilding are, just because it kind of gets you into your head that you have to eat a certain way in order to be accepted in the sport that you're in. So it adds this whole other layer of complexity. I actually did one bodybuilding competition as well, and I did it after all this happened. So it was really kind of trippy to revisit those feelings, but just in a completely different, also controlled setting. So I really resonate with a lot with what you were saying, just regarding feeling that pressure and feeling like, oh, like those bits of perfectionism and just always wanting to feel like more in a setting like that.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And you touched on something where it had also related to abandonment for you. And what sparked my attention in our conversation when we were eating tacos is you had mentioned the four different types of attachment that we have. I want to talk about that.
Yeah, absolutely. I can give kind of like a Spark Notes version of the four different kinds of attachment. So there is secure attachment, which is someone that is comfortable with closeness and love and intimacy and doesn't fear the things like abandonment. Then there's anxious attachment, which is kind of what it sounds like. These are people that typically crave that closeness and really want to be close to people and usually fear abandonment and rejection and typically do things if they feel someone pulling away to make sure that they're not being abandoned. So pulling them closer, texting them more, calling them more, doing things to try to feel like they're not going to be left behind. And avoidant is kind of what it sounds like, the complete opposite, where those people are really afraid of that closeness and afraid to experience that love, usually out of fear of losing it. So it's kind of almost the same thing, but it just manifests in such a different way than anxious attachment. So usually people that are avoidant will avoid relationships and commitments. And a lot of the time, ironically enough, a lot of people with anxious attachment and avoidant attachment usually end up together because they kind of unconsciously reaffirm each other's core beliefs, where a lot of the time people with anxious attachment have this core belief, usually subconscious, that says love is not consistent, love is not secure, love must be earned. I have to earn this love and I have to feel good enough for this love. Therefore, the avoidant usually confirms that as they're pulling away and sometimes getting closer in order to kind of earn that love. And then on the opposite end of things, usually the avoidants have this core belief that says love is scary, it doesn't work out, I don't deserve it. And the anxious shows that love and usually shows it pretty intensely. So they kind of do this dance with one another where usually the anxious is pulling forward and the avoidant is moving backward. So that's a really interesting experience and interesting how it's really common. And then the last one is disorganized attachment. And this one is the push and the pull. So it's usually I love you, I hate you. It's really seen commonly in things like borderline personality disorder. Not saying that you have to have that in order to have that attachment style, but it is more of a rare one. And usually it comes from a longstanding history of trauma and being abandoned in relationships and having inconsistency in your relationships.
And Morgan just laughed right now because I pointed at myself and I said, I am disorganized attachment. I don't even want to title myself as that, but I hate to admit I am still that person where I would want a reaction or I'd want some sort of validation in a way. And if I don't get it, then I avoid. And then if I, you know, I overly reassure and then I go back and forth and it's still a learning curve for me. So it feels very disorganized.
Yeah. I mean, it's big to own that too, because once you can put a label to it, you know, that's a starting point to healing that and becoming more secure. Because I mean, all attachment is kind of on a spectrum. It doesn't always land perfectly in one box, but it lands somewhere in one of those four categories, and you can usually do the work to bring it more towards secure.
Now, it seems like secure has, I mean, the gold standard, right? That's what we all want to get into. But how can somebody go from one of the other three attachments into a secure attachment?
So I think there are two parts to that. I think one of that is doing their own individual work to understand mm-hmm. how their attachment style developed and their relationship towards relationships and the relationship with their self. And I also think that with attachment trauma, which is usually what happens in order to develop an insecure attachment style, has to be healed in relationships. So that adds a layer of complexity to this all, because part of that is the more you're with someone that's secure, the more healing that's going to be for you if you have an insecure attachment style, because you're going to learn that that person is a secure base for you, and you're going to learn that love can be safe, love can be trusted. So I would say it's a mix of those two things. Hopefully finding someone that's secure or willing to work towards secure as well, and doing that work with both yourself individually and in the relationship.
I love that, because I've heard so many people say, if you're not healthy, if you're not feeling this way, you should be by yourself and you should fix it all on your own. And you need to go through this world alone until you can find the right partner that complements you, not completes you, right? We hear all the different sayings, but I'm like, I actually really like that you say that, because some people just really need people in their lives. And I kind of feel like I'm one of them, where I do like to be alone, but I want to know that I'm with someone who's secure, that I can be my more secure self with that person. And it makes me feel validated knowing that they are secure of me. I feel very confident and trustworthy in knowing that, like, I'm not going to go run off and cheat on this person. I'm not going to go run off and lie and bash and do that. But I know that I need to also hold myself accountable and saying that I'm not going to jump ship and abandon, or that I'm not going to get too clingy and, you know, be like a drug that's addicted to the person and feel just as secure with them as they do with me.
Totally. And you make such a good point about, it's like that saying that's, you can't love anyone else until you love yourself. Like, I feel like that's such a degrading saying, because it's basically saying that you're unlovable until you learn how to love yourself, which is so not true. And mm-hmm. I think that kind of reinforces a lot of the time the hatred that people have for themselves. So I think kind of reframing that and getting that saying out of the way and more integrating the saying that, you know, you can be loved and you will be loved, and that you do have to do your own work and work in the relationship in order to build a secure, happy, and healthy relationship.
Have you experienced any of these anxious, disorganized, avoidant type of attachments? Because I also see you in just what I've observed, and not to touch too much on your personal life if you're okay with it, but I have caught you watching Sunset with your boyfriend before, just hanging out and grabbing lunch on the boardwalk. And I'm like, you guys seem very happy together. So I feel like that to me is really cool and hopeful to see that in you as something that I get to and so many other people get to hopefully experience as well. Hey, M3 family, check this out. Whether you're a fitness enthusiast or someone looking to take that first step towards a healthier you, First Form's got you covered. Their high quality supplements are designed to help you perform at your very best, from premium protein powders, complete micronutrient packs, and cutting edge pre-workout formulas that will kickstart your workouts. First Form is all about getting real people, real results, and I'm one of them. I've been using First Form supplements consistently for over 2 years now, and the difference in my overall health is incredible. I've been hitting new personal bests in the gym, getting better quality sleep, and feeling completely energized throughout my entire workday. What sets First Form apart is their commitment to quality and education. They provide the best nutrient-dense ingredients, plus their products are backed by rigorous testing and research. And guess what? They've got a special offer just for M3 listeners. Click the link in the show notes to explore the full range of supplements and receive free shipping on your next order. So don't wait. Take the first step towards a healthier, happier you with First Form, because I know your goals are within reach and I'm here to help you crush them. Thank you, First Form, for supporting our show, and thank you all for listening. Now let's get back to our podcast.
That is such a good point, because I will say that my current boyfriend is the healthiest relationship I have ever had in my entire life, hands down. And it is also the place that I have had the most of my baggage come out and the most opportunity to work through that baggage. Because when I look at my relationship history, I do not have the best track record. I was essentially dating the same person in different bodies. Like, I was repeating this pattern and I was the common denominator out of all of it. I was picking those avoidant people and people that would reaffirm, again, that core belief that I wasn't enough and that I had to be doing more. Mm-hmm. And I was still navigating what healthy love looked like. I knew nothing about boundaries. I was still also figuring out who I was and what I wanted. Mm-hmm. And when I came across my current boyfriend, before that, I spent a significant amount of time alone. I want to say it was 3 or 4 years I was single for. I went on dates here and there, but I wasn't in a committed relationship. And during that time, I did a lot of individual work on myself. And I actually got to this point where I thought, like, I'm good. I'm quote unquote healed. Like, I'm ready for a relationship. And I learned really quickly that everything that happened in my other relationships was going to be brought up in this healthy one. And a lot of the time in my other relationships, they were really toxic and there was a lot of ups and downs and my nervous system was always dysregulated. And I started to feel peace in this relationship. And that's actually really foreign and can sometimes feel scary to someone that's not used to feeling like their nervous system is regulated and they're at peace. So I would say that my current relationship has brought out the best of me and the most of my baggage, but in a good way, because I've learned to work through that baggage individually on my own. I still go to therapy. I have for 10 years now. And also with him, because I learned that there's someone out there that's going to listen to my fears and reassure me of those fears and also work with me to do things that he can't control on his end to make me feel safe. And I think that that's really powerful, and the ultimate, I guess, showing of love in a relationship is to be able to make that sacrifice for the other person.
Agreed. Wow. Kudos to him. That's amazing.
Yeah, he's a good man.
So I like the idea, again, of not having to go through life alone, not having to feel like you have to detach yourself from everything in order to feel like you're complete, you're whole, you're all you, you're perfect, right? Just as you are. And I feel like everybody is perfect just as they are, together or single, whoever they might be with or however it might be. People are enough and they don't hear that enough. What are some of the things that you feel are commonalities with your clients when you talk to them in therapy?
Like regarding the relationships?
Even anxiety in general too. Because I was even thinking of just mental health aspects of relationships are such a common part of it. But then people come and they might even just say, I'm not good enough. I don't deserve to be with anyone. I'm here to talk to you because maybe I was told I need to talk to a therapist by my ex or who knows, right? Because I've been told that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, I would say a lot of my clients also struggle with anxious attachment in particular. And a lot of them had really inconsistent parents is what I find, which actually does lead to anxious attachment a lot of the time. And also your attachment style can change. So maybe you didn't have this as a baby. Maybe it has nothing to do with your parents and you were cheated on when you were a teenager and then it developed then. So not necessarily saying it has to do with this, but a lot of my clients had parents that sometimes would show up for them and sometimes wouldn't. And that created a lot of anxiety around inconsistency and uncertainty in the world. So I definitely see that a lot. And I do see a relationship to disordered eating and also dysfunctional relationships as well. And it's, you kind of hit the nail on the head with your story as well. That's such a common theme, of seeing someone that you love be with someone else while you're with them and having that betrayal wound. I mean, you're trying to make sense of it. Like, that's what the brain does. It tries to make sense of things. So if you see that and you have all these probably already dysfunctional beliefs, maybe about diets from diet culture and society and unrealistic beauty standards, you might think my natural response is to compare myself to this person. Mm-hmm. And if I can be as quote unquote beautiful as this person or whatever my idea in my head is around this person, then maybe I can have that love and acceptance from this person. So that's also something I see that's really common.
I mean, just going back to my own childhood real quick is I'm a child of 4 divorces. My mom had cheated on my dad. My dad had cheated on my stepmom. And in that time frame of when he was cheating on my stepmom. And also, again, my stepdad cheated on my mom. Like, it was a very common pattern that showed up in my childhood. And I kind of just always assumed, like, people always hate each other when relationships break up and people will just cheat and that's how relationships end and that people aren't trustworthy. And that's, I see those commonalities show up as a reality where I had to tell myself that that's not the truth, that that's just what I experienced in one of billions of cases for children. And of that, it's like you said, the eating disorder coming in to pattern with it was my dad at the time I was 12, 13 years old, again, was cheating on my stepmom and with who is his now wife. And at that time, he was telling me, like, you shouldn't be eating the cheese. I used to eat like a box of Cheez-Its as a kid. Like, I'm sorry, but that's just what kids do. You know, we don't understand control of food at that time and we just want what's in front of us. And so he would make comments about me and say, you won't be able to fit into your clothes or you're going to be get fat or and those words never left me when I was growing up and going into my severe part of my eating disorder, because I kept thinking, like, this is somebody who is showing me value as a parent and that's love for me. And then they're telling me what they don't want and that they don't want to see in maybe their current partner and why they're cheating on their current partner, because I was also the child that was told to keep the cheating a secret. And I had to keep it a secret until I couldn't. I was 12 years old and didn't know how to hold that secret for myself. And for I eventually told my stepmom, because it's, a kid can't do that. That's so much to put on a kid too. Yeah.
Totally. In psychology, we call that being parentified. Have you ever heard that term?
No, what?
It's essentially a child is given responsibilities that a child should never have. It's basically the parent and the child are switching roles emotionally, and that can lead to so much anxiety. A lot of time it leads to substance use. A lot of time it leads to eating disorders. A lot of time it also leads to people that are highly successful, like yourself.
Well, so, thank you.
A lot of things come out of that. But yeah, it's basically switching those roles and giving you this, like, ungodly responsibility that no child should ever have to manage.
Wow. Crazy.
Yeah.
And I mean, I kid you not, like, my parents do show me in very beautiful forms that they do love me. I am going to be that person that just says I'm a lot closer to my mom. She's owned up to a lot of her mistakes. My dad has owned up to a lot of his mistakes, but my mom is very much constant every day texting, you know, trying to find her way to come out there and just remind me, like, I'm your number one fan. And coming into those places of gratitude has really helped. So for you to keep a journal, switch of subjects here, but for you to keep a journal is huge, because I don't think people recognize how important it is to have a journal to reflect on, to have gratitude over, and to remind themselves of where their current state is and where they were and where they can be. So just thinking of time as a past, present, future type of thing.
Absolutely. And I think just writing in general is such a powerful tool to regulate your emotions and ground you. And also just, like, it doesn't have to live inside of you anymore. Like, when you have all these thoughts racing and you're catastrophizing everything and thinking in all of these dysfunctional ways, once you get it out on paper, it doesn't have to fester anymore. And that can be such a powerful tool. And I love your flexibility in your relationship with your parents as well, where it sounds like you're not black and white about that, which is also, like, such a superpower, because so many people fall into that black and white and kind of create these assumptions and core beliefs based off of really awful traumatic experiences. But it sounds like you're someone that's able to, you know, create this positivity and turn pain into power and have that flexibility. And that's just such an amazing thing to have.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for that. So speaking of writing, what's your second book that you are working on right now, Miss Grounding Thought Process Woman?
So it's actually going to be a poetry book. I'm really excited for this one.
Yeah, beautiful.
It's more recent. Yeah. I knew that I wanted to write a second book and I knew that I wanted to write one soon. I just didn't know how I wanted to structure it. So I started to write poetry, again, not really intending for it to be published the same way as my first book was. But then I started to realize that every poem I wrote had a story, and it usually had to do with, like, a core theme that I was working on in therapy. So, for example, I have one poem called Invite Her Around. And it's basically about my inner child and this part of myself that I try to avoid and get rid of because she's so painful to feel and be around. And it's this concept of my therapist basically saying, invite her around, like put your arm around her, comfort her, don't fuse with her because that's when things start to get really dysfunctional and you lose your sense of self, but like have her next to you and know that, and teach her that she's safe. So like, I really liked the idea that every poem was like a different concept of something really big I was working on. And it was in, I guess, an easy to read kind of way, where my first book, in my opinion, it's not that it's hard to read, but it's definitely like a lot more put together, whereas the poems kind of separate into these individual concepts. And I like the creativity behind it as well. So I'm really excited about this one.
You're inspiring me to write poetry. I think that would be very therapeutic in itself.
You should.
Okay. All right. Challenge accepted.
You should start a poetry club.
I'm down.
Every week.
When do you plan to publish this book?
Hopefully soon. So the biggest challenge for me is formatting it, because I'm going to do a self-publishing as well. So right now I'm in the midst of formatting, and I also need to add a couple more poems. So right now I want to say it's at like 48 pages, and I would really like to make it a little bit longer with some of the poems I add in there. So I'm hoping to get a little bit more in. So hopefully sometime either the end of this year or early next year.
Okay, I like that. And as far as anybody who is looking to maybe fix, I don't even like the word fix. There's nothing wrong with people, remember. So if there's anything that they can change or better their practice from feelings of anxiety or feelings of depression or, you know, inadequacy that leads to disorders like an eating disorder or mental health disorder of some sort, what are some practices that you think are really important for people to root themselves back to who they are and knowing that they're enough?
I think one really powerful thing is the people you're surrounding yourself with and feeling connected, because I think a lot of mental health conditions come from being disconnected from yourself and kind of losing yourself a little bit. And I know that that's something I've done in a lot of my relationships, where I get really invested and I'm so scared of losing the person that I also lose myself and I abandon myself in the process, which is ironic now that I say that out loud. But finding healthy connections around you in terms of friendships, mentors, family, just being able to identify what a healthy connection looks like and surrounding yourself with that. And also knowing who you are, like being able to sit down with yourself and ask yourself, who am I? What do I enjoy? And investing in that. Because I think a lot of the time we get really caught up in work and doing things a certain way that we forget, like, this is who I am and this is a hobby that I like. So sometimes, for example, I like to draw, and sometimes I won't draw for 6 months and I'll kind of lose sight of that. So really connecting back to the things that you like, even thinking about what you liked as a kid, because a lot of the time as a kid, like, you find out what you like pretty early on, and a lot of times experiences in your life and traumas kind of take you away from that. So I would say connecting back to those other people that bring out the best of you and support you, and also connecting back to yourself and the things that you like and bring you joy.
And when you're alone?
Ooh, that's a good one. So I would say also enjoying, or learning to enjoy, I should say, time alone. I think that I have had a history of staying chronically busy, so I never had to spend time with myself, because usually what happens when I spend time with myself, and I still struggle with this here and there, is that all the things that I've been avoiding feeling just come to the forefront and they hit me like a train. And it's all of the things that I haven't let go of, or the things I haven't processed, or all the things that I don't want to feel. I tend to be, or have been, and sometimes still will be, avoidant of my own emotions, because like I said, I have intense emotions. So if I'm going to have an uncomfortable emotion, I know it's going to hit me probably a lot harder than it would hit someone that maybe doesn't have as intense of emotions. So I think it's learning to spend time with myself in a way that feels good. So instead of pacing around and having all of these thoughts and like panicking and wondering what to do with that, I'll light a candle and I'll set an intention for myself to journal for an hour, or I'll go on a walk and kind of discharge some of that pent-up energy when I'm feeling really restless, or I'll turn on a show that I really like. I think a lot about like self-soothing and finding foods that I like and making like a comfortable setting for myself, or getting myself moving is another big one. So yeah, just learning ways to regulate myself when I'm alone and not dwell in my own thoughts, because I tend to do that.
You just touched on a really big one for me. I actually really enjoy spending a lot of time in the kitchen. I'm actually baking sweet potato yams right now for Friendsgiving tonight. And I love being in the kitchen, kind of like a similar thing where we were in such control of our food through bodybuilding competitions, through eating disorders, then different formats. But this one, I get to be in control of how I enjoy my food and how I enjoy taking control of it in a sense that it's for pleasure. It's for telling myself that I deserve it. And it's a sacrosanctity in that sense. So if like most people want to go out and eat a burger, why not just make a burger from scratch at home and put the value into what that delicacy can be when you put the ingredients in and you put the love and care into it? That's like real TLC in food. And that's what makes me enjoy. That's like my happy place for real. And I don't know if you know anything about human design, but I had somebody had drawn up and did a diagram for me for human design. And my happy place, like what they call it, is a place of peace in the kitchen. And so I was like, this makes a lot of sense too.
Oh my gosh, that's so perfect. And that's full circle too. Human design, yes.
Do you know yours?
I'm a generator.
Oh girl, yes.
What are you?
An emotional manifester.
Ooh. Nice. So, do you resonate with that a lot?
Yes. I feel like I plop out all the ideas and then I need you to help make them come true.
Beautiful. At least you know that about yourself. So that's like a superpower in itself.
Yeah. Oh, Morgan, I'm so happy I had you on this show. This was so cool. And if there's anything else that you could share as far as tips with aspirations for the future, things that you want to do and big projects that you have upcoming. I mean, writing a book is a big one, but for the next time you go and you speak in public, if there's anything coming up, big goals or dreams, and then also what would you share with the audience as like today's your last day on earth, how would you spend it and live it to the fullest?
Oh, those are good questions. In terms of a project, so right now I'm actually creating my own little business and website called Beyond Your Mask. And basically, it's going to be a hub with free resources for people to utilize, especially if they can't afford therapy. So I'm making all these different journal prompts for different topics. Like right now, I have one on intrusive thoughts. I have another on grief. I have another on breakup. So I'm trying to make a hub there. And I'm also making it a place if people want to book me for presentations and speaking, they can do that. So I'm really excited about that project. And if it was my last day on earth, how I would spend it would definitely be with the people that I love and care about. So surrounded by those people. Also, I would say moving my body, because I think that movement is obviously amazing medicine. So being able to do that and celebrate my body and what it's done for me. And I think that that's such a huge shift from where I've been in terms of my appreciation for my body and how I care for it. And also, lastly, I would say enjoying good food, because food deserves to be enjoyed and celebrated around the company of good people. So I would say those would be my big three.
Drop mic right there. Just vomit. What do they call it? Mic drop instead. Yeah.
Yes.
Like you just drop the mic. Wow, that's awesome, Morgan. I'm so happy to have you. Thank you again for everything and for sharing your story with us. I think doing episodes like this allows people to get to know that they're not alone and that they might be going through similar things and that there's always a way out from it.
Totally. And thank you for having me and for your vulnerability as well. As always, it's been a pleasure.
Oh, love you, girl.
Love you.
Thank you for joining me on another episode as we learned and explored all things movement, mindset, and medicine. As always, my goal for each episode of this podcast is to share innovative tools and techniques to help you thrive and find stability with your overall health and personal development, alongside the growth of the world around us. Please share this with someone you know will benefit from this episode, as well as rate and review. This helps us reach more people and provide feedback as to how we can better help each of you. Make sure to check out our community website, www.mermaidmethod.com, to learn more about our upcoming events, eco-friendly products, and coaching programs. Now let's make massive waves together.